Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Get Healthy Now with Denise Thompson, certified transformational health and wellness coach, nurse, fitness trainer, educator, Blog Talk Radio host, and best-selling author. Today, I have the privilege to have a very special guest on the call with me. Her name is Sigoina Tansman, and she is a speech-language pathologist and life coach for more than 25 years. She has coached thousands of people in the best brain practices for optimum performance. She draws up on her international life experience from having worked in Italy and Germany, as well as both the East Coast and West Coast of the USA. She recognizes that worldwide human beings share the same core needs, a purpose to wake up in the morning, to grow and contribute, and to create meaning in their lives. She's trained with legendary coaching gurus like Tony Robbins, Dr. Dawson Church, Brooke Castillo, and Mitch Matthews, and is a master practitioner of NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. Sigoina is best known for her down-to-earth practicality, enthusiasm, and sense of humor. She's also an author of a bestseller book, Hope After Stroke for Caregivers and Survivors, The Holistic Guide, Getting Your Life Back. She's humor and poignant life stories, or her humor and poignant life stories appear in 15 different anthologies of Chicken Soup for the Soul. She is a current contributor to Thrive Global with the Huffington Post. Her blog pieces about mental health appear on the largest online addiction recovery site, I Love Recovery Cafe. Sigoina gained national attention on CNBC News, USA Today, Glamour Magazine, Woman's Day Magazine, the LA Times, and the Chicago Tribune for authoring the first ever line of greeting cards for the unemployed in 1991, Pink Slip Production. Sigoina speaks as businesses sharing insights about the best brain practices for managing stress, enhancing communication, and improving well-being. Everyone knows stress is a killer, but not everyone knows how making simple changes can avert crisis and improve well-being. Her mission is to meet you at the top of the cliff, not at the bottom. For more than 25 years, she helped thousands of people transition after stroke, brain injury, or general stinking thinking to the next stages of their life. She says, you don't have to have a brain injury to damage your brain. You can do it by the very thought of you think and the language that you use. With storytelling as her core skill, she combines neuroscience with psychology and sprinkles it with real-life stories to serve up a hearty dish of inspiration. Wow, what an amazing person she is. So I just really want to welcome my guest, Sigoina. Are you here?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being on. I am so excited about just talking to you about those things on how stroke can affect people and whatnot. So, oh my gosh, you have so much to give. And I don't know if we have enough time, but we'll see. If not, we need to schedule another appointment.
Well, so, thanks. I'm here with you.
Oh, thank you so much. So you did actually write a book. Why did you write that book? What prompted you?
Right. So I wrote Hope After Stroke for Caregivers and Survivors because I wanted to empower people. I wanted to make them feel smart and capable because they're thrown into this catastrophic event. A stroke is a catastrophic event. And there wasn't this single go-to spot for information. So not only are you emotionally distressed and having all of this physical challenge, as you know, the caregivers, but all of a sudden you have to learn and earn a medical degree to just understand what's actually happening. So there wasn't this one spot where people could get information about what happened, what next, what now. And I wanted to put it in a very simplistic, linear way to feel like people had a therapist right by their side guiding them so they could become active participants in their own therapy and recovery.
Wow. That is amazing, and that is so needed. You're right. Most things that are out there are not specific enough or are not easy enough to understand so people can do it. But the way I have had the honor to start getting to know you a little bit, I am positive that you're using a language that people can understand and then follow and take your advice to make their lives easier in the sense that they know kind of what to expect. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So, for example, I don't speak the language of web design. I don't even know the questions to ask. So when I talk to my web designer, like I stand there with my mouth open because I know what I want. I want her to fix my website, but I don't know how to ask her those questions. And I think the same thing happens when you're in a situation like this with a stroke where there's so many complications. You don't know what to even ask. You know what looks bad, what looks wrong. You know that you're terrified, but you don't know how to communicate with the people that you need to communicate. You need to learn that language very quickly. And I help simplify that because most importantly, we want people to dialogue with the professionals that are helping them because nobody knows you like you know yourself. Nobody knows your loved one like you know your loved one. So being able to communicate with the right professionals at those critical moments with a language that's compatible, it makes a huge difference in the way recovery takes place.
And it sounds to me like you are their advocate, their voice, because of what you just explained. People who get struck by a tragedy like that, by those circumstances of stroke, no matter what degree of stroke it is, it always is a setback, and people have no clue what to expect. And by you taking the questions out of their mouth and helping them voice it, that's an amazing gift.
I've seen that with so many people. You know, everybody wants to know, how long is this going to take? Why does my loved one sound drunk? Why don't they remember things? Why do they get aggravated? Why do they become isolated? These are the recurrent questions. And I put them in a framework that becomes linear for people. You know, what happened? Life in the hospital. Then what's next when they come home? And what now, making it work when everyone leaves? These are the courses that everybody goes through, the course of time that everybody goes through. And having it all in one place is a fantastic beginning. Does it answer every question in the world? Of course not. But it arms people with enough information and capability to start to really feel empowered and competent in exploring more and getting to the root of what they really need.
Fantastic. That is so good. Then I saw you're talking about something holistic. What do you mean by holistic in this case?
Right. So holistic means taking into account the whole person, meaning more than just their body parts. I was always struck by this concept when I worked in hospitals. In the hospital, the therapist kind of cut the person into pieces. So the speech therapist takes from the neck up, the occupational therapist takes from the neck to the trunk, and the physical therapist takes from the legs down. And while we do really work as a team, of course, what we have to understand that a person is a whole person, including more than just their body parts. It includes the mental, physical, emotional, social, and spiritual components. And that's a huge thing to take into account because not one size or one approach of therapy works for every person.
So true. And that's exactly what I consider healthcare, what you just described. What they're doing today is literally chopping up people into certain categories, who's doing what, when, and where, and how, without actually really communicating to the next person whose job it is to continue at a different area. And by looking at it the holistic way, as you just described, there are so many more benefits to healing than the regular settings offer. I've been in there, too, as a nurse before, so I understand what you're talking about, and I can just emphasize it's amazing. So, why should people feel there is hope after stroke?
Well, I love this question because truly the brain is very resilient. Thousands of people make progress way beyond that 3 to 6 month mark where very often a doctor might say, well, at 6 months, this is as good as it gets. And that's just not true. If you go to any online support stroke group, you'll hear thousands of people saying, you know, my doctor said I'd never walk or talk again, and here I am running up the stairs. And it's not to bash doctors. We love our doctors, and we need our doctors. They are so critical to our very fact of having life at all. Amazing, amazing people. Doctors have the diagnosis, but they don't always have the prognosis for what's going on. In fact, Les Brown, great motivational speaker, says specifically, doctors have the diagnosis, God has the prognosis. And whether or not you believe in God, what I can say is that neuroplasticity means that we change all the time. Our brain is constantly growing and changing. And that can be for good or for ill. You know, the simplest way to describe what neuroplasticity means is do it again. That is, whatever we repeatedly do becomes hardwired into our brain. And so it can be for positive gain, so we can actively change habits, for example. But it can also be for negative, because whatever bad habits we get into get equally hardwired into our brain. But if you have a second, I'd love to tell you a story about a patient of mine, and that is about false hope. Can I do that?
Please, please.
Okay, great. So I worked with this man who was in his young 40s, and he'd had a devastating stroke, a stroke that actually rendered him blind. When I first met him, I only met him 3 weeks post-hospitalization, and he was mute. He literally said nothing for the first week that I met him. The second week, he started to speak, but complete gibberish. He didn't seem to understand anything. It was really one of the worst strokes I had seen. And I accompanied him and his wife to a doctor's appointment. And the wife was distraught, as you can only well imagine. She had 3 young children, and she was also in her young 40s. And so she asked the doctor, you know, what do you think? You know, how is he going to improve? And the doctor was very grave and said, I don't want to give you false hope. He's had a devastating stroke. And she immediately said, well, then why are we doing all these therapies? And he didn't really have a great answer. And when we left, I pulled her aside and I said, what the doctor knows is the facts of today, But there is no such thing as false hope. Hope is hope. Hope is a belief. Hope is an expectation that something can change. And when we have hope, we put energy into it, right? We don't know what the outcome is going to be. And in fact, this man did within not a very long period of time, because I typically at that point only saw patients for up to maybe 3 months. And within that 3 month period of time, he was independent enough to walk to a local CVS market, order an ice cream cone, have a conversation, exchange the cash, know how to get back home. This was amazing. I mean, simply amazing. I never would have expected that. Now, he had a long way to go, because when I had last left him, his judgment and his impulse control were very challenging. In fact, we came home one day and found him standing on a ladder with a chainsaw. So he had a ways to go, but this idea that there is resilience in the brain tells us that there is fantastic hope. And I feel that the people I've worked with have taught me more about hope and resilience. And as a result, I feel very obligated to share that message.
Wow, that touched my soul, because I know one person, a dear friend of mine, who had also a major stroke. And this, what you just said, confirms everything that he shared with me. He actually was in his 50s and has a beautiful family and everything else. And out of the blue, boom, major stroke with aphasia.
Yes.
He couldn't talk, mm-hmm. He couldn't move, he couldn't do anything. Now, that was a little bit over a year ago. And he said, the mind is so strong. He touched on the mind. That's why I'm going there. The mind is so strong. And I decided I'm not going to cave. I am going to do whatever it takes so I can talk again. And he had a lot of speech pathologies, therapy, everything else, learned how to form his or shape his mouth to make certain sounds. And today he is talking again. He is driving again. And mm-hmm. You can still realize he's a little bit slower than he was before. He was a very, very well-known professional speaker. And so he's a little bit slower now. However, due to his tenacity and doing it over and over and over again, he conquered the biggest fear his family had, that he would never be able to communicate again. He can. And that's exactly what you said. The mind can actually give us health or can cause illness. It depends on how we use it. And so, man,
absolutely.
We're talking the same language here. I love it. So,
you know, one of the
great
most
story.
I just want to point out too, one of the most famous stroke survivors, Jill Bolte Taylor, who's done a brilliant book called My Stroke of Insight, and she did a TED talk that garnered, 8 million views. She really explains that her full recovery took 8 years. So it's impossible to know what is taking place. I actually have another amazing story. What is taking place right there at that moment? We can't possibly say what the outcome is going to be. Can I share one more amazing story? Just happened.
Please. Please.
So I was working with this woman who had they weren't really even sure whether she had a stroke or not. She had an event that rendered her unconscious. She ended up in the hospital. And when they did a brain scan, they looked at her brain and they told her family, this 65-year-old woman has the brain of an 80-year-old. It showed an enormous amount of brain atrophy. Prior to the stroke, she had dealt with a pretty significant alcoholism, as well as chronic pain, just terrible chronic. So she ended up in the hospital. The doctors were very discouraged by what they saw, and they essentially told the family, that really they needed to consider hospice as their best alternative. And so they transitioned her from this acute setting. She'd only been there, you know, a week or so, 5 days. They transitioned her to the hospice setting. And as they were literally going to be leaving the acute care facility to the long-term nursing facility, the woman woke up. She woke up and she started talking. Now, she made no sense. She was completely disoriented. You could tell that she could pronounce her words, but the content of her speech wasn't making much sense. But all of a sudden, this was a pretty drastic change. And they said, well, okay, maybe she's not hospice material yet. So let's see what happens. Well, I won't take you through the course of it, but over a period of literally 3 months, she ended up in a skilled nursing facility where they did do therapy. She was not a candidate for aggressive therapy because, quite honestly, they didn't believe she had the capacity. But within a period of 3 months, she recovered her memory. She recovered her perspective, ability to plan and judgment. Long story short, this woman went home to live independently. Within 3 months, she was headed for hospice and essentially to pull the plug. I mean, that just happened, and that is a pretty amazing story.
That truly is. And I've seen patients of mine many, many moons ago when I was in nursing all the time. They went to pull the plug, and the patients came out of a coma and started talking again. And I mean, those things are shocking. Does happen. Yeah. I mean, we both have witnessed it now. It's not that we're making up those stories. They are real. So your point, doctors diagnose, and what was the other one? And God has
the prognosis.
And God has the prognosis. Yes, that is 100% correct. I mean, it touches my heart. I just had goosebumps a few times when you were talking because I can see exactly what's going on. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, and you said something about your friend and his grit and determination. And I actually wrote a chapter in my book titled The Secret Sauce of Recovering. And that is absolutely one of the components to the secret sauce of recovering. And can I share a little bit about what I think those five factors are?
100%. Yes.
Okay, great. I like to call these the non-evidence-based, purely anecdotal factors that I've seen occur time and time again. You know, there's a lot of research and medical, you know, investigation about what is predictive of recovery. And it's really hard to say. There's no conclusive information. We would typically think that the less severe the injury, the better the outcome. But that's not always the case. So this is what I have personally witnessed as being the secret sauce of recovery. And the first one is a person has to have some sort of faith. Now, that does not mean faith in God necessarily. I've worked with people of every denomination. So whether it's Allah or Krishna or source energy or crystals or God as, you know, we traditionally might think of God, the people that are atheist or agnostic have a belief in doctors, a belief in medicine. In other words, is a belief in something bigger than one's own self. So first of all, faith is something. Faith in family support. Secondly is the brain's function and ability prior to stroke. How curious was a person? And this doesn't mean formal education. It's just how much did they use their brain? How interested were they? And did they have many other neural networks, associations, and how curious they were? A third one is that everybody believed that they were here for a reason. You know, I speak to stroke survivors sometimes who have had these near-death experiences that they can remember and recall saying in that transition period, and they don't like to speak about it. Not everybody wants to hear this, but I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to have said, I saw a light, or I felt this incredible calm. But then I saw my wife crying, and she said I was here for a reason and that I needed to go back. So people believe that they're here for a reason, that somebody depends on them. Again, it's something sort of bigger than themselves, right? Kind of if you think about it in the same way, if you ever are by yourself and you typically live with people, when those people aren't around, you're less likely to cook a meal for yourself. You're more likely to do that when there are other people because there's more of a, quote, reason. Of course, we should be our most important reason, but that's another factor, being here for a reason. Determination across the board is absolutely such a critical component of recovery because, let me tell you, recovery is a marathon. It's not a sprint, and you need to have that determination. And then lastly, you know, it's a reverence for life, like that there's just this belief that life is a wonderful thing. I have had stroke survivors tell me that they had previously been alcoholic and that the stroke was a blessing to them. They were so happy they had a stroke because that relieved them of this burden of alcoholism. So you can only imagine how intense alcoholism must be to a person that a stroke seems like an upgrade, right?
Wow. That is amazing. Yet it just proves again that we actually can rewire our brains and make them work better for us instead of giving in and let the negativity take over or the illness take over. It's just, that's an amazing factor in our lives.
It is. And so are these other, like, you know, I always say in a secret sauce, there's some special secret ingredients that nobody ever tells you. And the other ingredients are gratitude, humor, persistence, and acceptance. Those are really, really critical factors that I've seen just make the difference between a survivor and a thriver. And these are true, I think, really, regardless of whether it's a stroke, neurological illness, whatever event it is in your life. Those are the factors that everybody goes through, whether you've had a financial loss, right? Those things are the things that bring you out of any negative situation.
You said the word gratitude, and that struck me because I never heard it as often as I've heard it over the last probably year or year and a half. And most of us health coaches, we have a gratitude journal where we, you know, mention actually what we're grateful for. There could be things that so many people take as for granted, yet what we're in right now, the time we're in right now, nothing is to be taken for granted, not even having a roof over the head. Because we don't know what's happening with all the things. And so my gratitude every day in the morning, first thing when I wake up, I am grateful for a roof over the head, for a bed to sleep in, for clothes on my back, for food on the table, for having a loving husband, for having wonderful friends. All these things I do not take for granted. So grateful that I am blessed with these things. And I don't want to preach or come across like a super religious person or anything. As you said, faith is good, but faith means many different things. But I just want to stress, as you did, having hope and being filled with gratitude can definitely make our lives better.
Well, there's science behind it, too. There's science behind that. I absolutely agree. And, you know, it's great because mainstream medical practitioners are understanding the literal physical science behind gratitude, the way it actually changed the shape of the brain, the way it influences the cells environment, which then influences our DNA. I mean, it's down to a scientific level now. It's not just airy-fairy, hoo-ha, or religious. You know, it's down to science.
Wow, that's so true. Well, let's see if we can answer a few more questions. I actually heard that you're working on a companion journal or workbook to accompany your book. What is that like?
Yeah, that's so great, because I realized that a book is great. We want knowledge, but knowledge is only powerful when we apply it. And that's the workbook part of this. So the workbook, although I wrote the book, Hope After Stroke for Caregivers and Survivors, I am creating two separate workbook recovery journals for both the survivor and one for the caregiver. And each day has a workbook around a daily ritual, including what can I appreciate? If we can't get to the word, you know, sometimes people can, you know, say, what do I have to be grateful for? This completely sucks. You know, my life has been destroyed. What can I be grateful for? And so I like to use the word appreciate as maybe a softer word, because there are things that we can appreciate, even somebody holding the door open. Like when we really drill down on the things that we can appreciate, we start to then create a vibration, an energetic vibration that attracts more of that. So you notice it's again, back to science, it's the reticular activating formation in your brain. But when you are thinking about buying a car, right, you've got this car in mind, and all of a sudden, because it's on your brain, you start to see more of that car around. That's a natural function of your brain. And when we start to train our brain to look for something positive, we start to see more things that are positive. When we start to see more things that are positive, we change our internal structures. So the workbook has a daily practice of checking in. It's a real mindfulness type of practice where we check in and with our energy levels, we check in with our what we can appreciate, we check in with what will be a success and a win for the day. But there's also lots of other information in there to help your brain and to help you realize that you're not on this journey alone, that you have support, that you have inner guidance, that you have other resources. So it's a very practical and simple way of taking you through a journey of recovery, a journey of a role change. You know, suddenly caregivers are thrust into a role that they've not necessarily signed up for, certainly have not had any training for, and yet, you know, there they are. So it's a great way to get grounded and start their day in this positive way. I always like to say, you know, what's the most important thing when you're baking a cake if you want a really great cake? And people go, oh, it's the ingredients. Well, it's not just the ingredients. You have to preheat that oven, because if you can have all the great ingredients in the world, but until you preheat that oven, that cake's not going to rise. And this daily practice is like preheating your oven. It's tuning yourself to the vibration that you have strength and resilience and determination and resourcefulness.
Love that analogy. Never heard that one before. I want to say it needs a rising agent like baking powder or something like that. But yes, it is the oven needs to be preheated, because if you put it in a cold oven, it is not going to rise. That's for sure.
That's right.
That is awesome. Well, we were talking about at the beginning that you were a master NLP person. So can you explain to the audience what NLP or neuro-linguistic programming actually means?
Yes. So NLP stands for, you said it, neuro-linguistic programming. And it's essentially a model of the way we communicate, not only to ourselves and, well, not only to other people, but to ourselves. It's the way we process information. And so I think the easiest way to describe this is, people have mostly heard they're three types of learning. There's the visual learning, the auditory, and the kinesthetic. There's other senses as well, but those are the primary ones. And this, so the visual learner learns best by seeing something, the auditory learner by what we hear, the sounds of the words, the tempo and the volume. The kinesthetic one is, you know, what we can physically do and touch. Well, we encode information in different ways, and we can communicate better with people knowing what style of communication they use by using language that actually speaks to that. So just now I said using language that speaks to that. If you're an auditory learner, that would be something that you'd pick up on. If I said using language that you can see and picture, that would be great for a visual learner. Or can you feel what I'm getting at? That would be great for a kinesthetic learner. And it's like having a magic key, really, because you fit into their brain, their own neurology. Neuro, obviously, is the neurology, and linguistic is the language. So words are very important for how we communicate.
Very. You just hit on a big one, which is totally off topic, but it has to do with the learning styles. My daughter, when she was young, she had to learn the two times table, and she just had the hardest time. You could say it to her over and over again. She didn't get it. You could write it in front of her. She didn't get it. Then we came up with the idea, let's go for a walk, and we're going to talk and take the steps, and we're going to go 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? And we can bring it up to that. And sometimes she goes, Mommy, I got it. 2, 4, 6, 8. I know how it works. So that's,
isn't
very,
that brilliant?
She's very auditory and kinesthetic. If she doesn't have both, she can't, it doesn't sink in. She's not really visual, but she can visualize things amazingly. So that's where we need to make the difference. But anyway, let's go back on track here. That's just that was a sidestep. Why is language actually so important as part of recovery? And I think you already touched a little bit on it, but you might be able to expand some more.
Well, right. So there, you know, our words can shape our reality, not just describe it. And I think that's super important. One of the most important words I like to add in recovery is the word yet, right? So a person says, I can't lift my arm. And I say, I can't lift my arm yet, right? Doesn't that just change everything, right? So it gives us that possibility.
I hear hope in that one.
You
give the yet, it just opens it up.
Right. You know, I say that all the time to myself as I'm learning some new technological thing. I was like, I can't do this yet. Please, brain, open up. Let me learn this. So here's one of my favorites. You know, very typically with a stroke, a person is paralyzed on one side. They're hemiplegic or paralyzed on one side. And often either the therapist or a doctor or even the person themselves will refer to that side that is not functioning, that affected side, as their bad side. Well, that is a bad idea. And the reason that is a bad idea is because when something's bad, we tend to reject it. We want to get away from it. We want to ignore it. And the last thing you want to do when you have a paralyzed limb that you would like to bring back to life is pay attention to it. I mean, the last thing you want to do is forget it. We want to pay attention to it. So there's a term that's also used. It's called stroke affected side. So when I see that visually, it's SAS, and I turn it into sassy, right? When this is my sassy arm. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, let me get to know sassy. Who is sassy? Like, I'm curious about sassy, right? I want to know about sassy. And in order for you to connect with your body and see, you've got to be able to be curious about it. So that's another language hack that I like to use. As well as another language hack is, you know, very often incontinence is an issue after stroke. And adults are you know, told about the diaper, right? One of the biggest problems that stroke survivors have is that they often feel infantilized during their recovery. All these people are telling them things to do, and, you know, they feel controlled. They feel like babies, right? And then you add diaper to that, for God's sake. Yeah, that would be obnoxious. So, I mean, adults wear briefs, right? I mean, it's one thing if the stroke survivor wants to joke about it in a particular way, but that can also sort of be self-fulfilling and damaging. So I think that our language is very, very important. When we describe our goals, so often people describe what they don't want to do. I don't want to be dependent on them. Well, that means you want to be independent. Let's pivot our thinking in that direction, because when we pivot our thinking, this is where NLP comes in. The brain doesn't really process those negatives, right? I don't want to be dependent. The brain hears, I want to be dependent. That's not the message we want to give it. The message we want to give it is the positive aspect. I want to be independent. You know, we have to be able to put our goals in a positive perspective.
So true. So true. So actually, my next question is, why is stroke a woman's issue more so than a man's issue?
Well, you know, in the world of inequality, unfortunately, this is one area where women get more of the pie than men. And regrettably, that's not the slice we want, right? So the statistics reveal that when it comes to stroke, more women than men die, with a ratio of 60% to 40%. And what partially that has to do with the fact that women do live longer, and so later in their life they're more likely to get a stroke. But I think what's possibly even worse than death for single women is long-term disability. Stroke is the leading factor of long-term disability in this world today, and that's a really huge problem because you've got a long life ahead of you. And you know, single women are actually more at risk because they're often less likely to take immediate action to actually get medical treatment. And the timing factor of getting medical treatment is so vital because approximately 80% of strokes are blockage strokes, right? And those are the ones, for every minute that an artery is blocked, nearly 2 million neurons die. But more importantly, the brain loses like 14 billion synapses. And those synapses are the most important for making connections, right? It's more the networks that make that matter more. And those connections are responsible for every function of independence: walking, talking, thinking, eating, vision, hearing, memory, comprehension. So, you know, that's why this acronym FAST was created. The F part starts, so FAST, for your listeners that don't know, you know, 80% of all strokes are preventable. That's really good news, right? It's preventable through diet, through exercise, through monitoring your blood pressure and knowing your sugar numbers. But should you suspect that there might be a stroke occurring, the acronym FAST is helpful. So F stands for face. You're looking at somebody's face and you're looking for symmetry. Are both sides of the face equal, or does one side seem to be drooping? The A stands for arms. You ask a person to extend their arms, and once again, we're looking for asymmetry. Is one arm lower? Can a person raise their hands over their head? The S stands for speech. You ask somebody to say something, you know, something that they would know. Tell me your address. You listen for slurring words. You listen for odd words. And the T is the most important thing. That stands for time. That means call 911 immediately. Get a person to medical care immediately, for the very reason I said, that for every minute lost, we lose neurons. And with block strokes, there is a medication that can actually reverse the neurological damage. But it's only effective if given within the first 3.5 hours. It's a very time-sensitive thing, and that window has to be met. And I know during this period of COVID that more people, we're starting to see the numbers of people appearing at the hospital with stroke symptoms lessen, mm-hmm. and that's not because people, it's not because we're getting great numbers in improvement in stroke. It's because people are afraid to go to the hospital with COVID. They're afraid that they're going to go in and they're not going to come out, or they're afraid that they're going to go in and get COVID. And I can't stress this enough. If you believe that you may be having a neurological event like this, please, please, please go. You will be treated well. You will, it is much better, you are much better to take care of this urgent neurologic crisis. It's like the difference between having your computer completely crash or you get a ding on the glass, right? I liken the COVID virus possibly to the ding on the glass. It's more likely that you're going to recover from that. But a stroke has the potential of offering a lifelong disability. So please, please, please go to the hospital if you feel that you may be experiencing the symptoms of a stroke.
So true. Yeah, I actually had that thing posted on the mirror in the room where my father-in-law lived. My husband and I took care of him for 6 years. He had about 2 months to live when we took him in, and he lived for 6 years with us as an amputee, wow. diabetic, Alzheimer's, and dementia. And it a rough 6 years. But sometimes we thought he might have a stroke or not, and we just immediately went to the FAST. And when he could mm-hmm. do everything, we knew it wasn't. It was just maybe the medication just kicked in or something. So we knew it. And, of course, my husband was very happy that I had medical background and I could help him out yeah. with those things. But that's a really good one. Wow. I am so fortunate. Yeah. This is such a very valuable subject or topic. Yet many people are afraid to talk about it. And I think the better educated we are, the better our future looks like. No matter what it is, it just looks better when we are actually informed about what's going on.
So absolutely. And the fact that we have so much ability to prevent a stroke in general through our healthy mm-hmm. lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are some tools you normally have. Can you share some of them with your readers to lessen anxiety?
Sure. One of the tools that I like to use is a technique called emotional freedom technique, or tapping. And this is an evidence-based tool that's been approved by the American Psychological Association. And what it does is it combines cognitive behavioral therapy, which is essentially like talk therapy, with the acupressure meridian points in the body where energy flows. So it looks like you're tapping on your forehead and the side of your eye and under your nose and on your chin and on your chest while you're saying things like, even though I feel anxious right now, I love and appreciate myself. And the biggest problem with this is that it looks weird. Once you get over it, quote, looking weird, the effects of EFT as a self-regulating tool, a non-medical tool, is a fantastic resource, a self-help tool. That's the word I was thinking of, a self-help tool. So I'll give you an illustration by sharing a story. I worked with a woman who had a brain tumor. She was a postal clerk. She was walking the beat and delivering mail, and she was not feeling very well. She stopped into an insurance office and asked if she could call 911 because she really felt terrible. Well, by the time 911 arrived, she was in full-on seizure. They had taken her to a hospital. She didn't know she had anything wrong with her. She just felt bad that day. Took mm-hmm. her to the hospital. She woke up. She remembered waking up by herself. She was alone. She was on a gurney. and her doctor was sitting at the edge of the bed, and he said, well, I'm glad you're awake. Good news, we've discovered that you have a brain tumor. We don't know whether it's malignant or not, but we'll be back. And then he left, and he left her alone. I don't know what category that falls under, good news. Okay, good news, we found
doctor
something.
Says that
depends. It depends on what side of the fence you're on. It's good news. At any rate, when I met her, she was recovering from her hospital stay. And, you know, I always routinely ask, what medications are you on? And she showed me all of her medications. But then her sister piped up and said, you know, my sister's been having anxiety attacks every day since she's been home, and she never had them. And she showed me this bottle of Ativan that she was taking. And she said, and, you know, these panic attacks take place every day, right around 5 o'clock, just before dinner. So I asked the woman if she was willing to do this kind of funny technique called EFT tapping, that would allow her to sort of get out of that fight or flight response mode and get into a more relaxation mode and see what happens, whether she would learn anything from it or lessen her anxiety. So she agreed to do it. So we started tapping through. Even though I don't know why I have these anxiety attacks every day, I still love and appreciate myself, and I'm willing to learn or be open to learning. I can't remember the exact words I said. It's very intuitive as you do it. And practically, you can't even get it wrong as long as you speak the truth. Well, we went through a few rounds, and all of a sudden, you know, I picked up on the fact that these attacks occurred every day at the same time, 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock. I thought that was a unique characteristic. So we tapped on that. And all of a sudden, she burst into tears, and she said, oh, my God, I remember now when I woke up and the doctor told me that and he left me alone, I could hear this. The only sound I could hear was this ticking. It was the clock, and I looked up, and it was 5 o'clock. And she just had this incredible release. And we did a little couple more rounds of tapping. Well, guess what? She never had another anxiety attack after that. She had a long way to go in therapy. She still had plenty of cognitive things to work on, memory things to work on, balance. But she didn't have that overriding anxiety that added or blocked her from progressing more quickly. And that was just a self-help technique that she used. I write about it in my book. There are apps that you can get for free. The Tapping Solution are the people that are really promoting this style of self-help. And in fact, right now, in response to coronavirus, they've offered all these free tapping scripts. It's a beautiful little app. The app is free itself. You can get many scripts on there, and they show you a picture of where the tapping points are. They ask you to rate it subjectively. They walk you through the whole thing. You don't have to know anything about tapping. They take you through everything. And inclusive right now, as I mentioned, with a lot of anxiety about coronavirus, there's specific scripts for that as well. Nothing on stroke, but there are lots of different scripts they have about anxiety, about depression, about feeling worthy, those kinds of things. I highly recommend people check it out if they're interested in learning anything about tapping emotional freedom technique. It's called the Tapping Solution, and they can go online. You know, it's on Android. I'm not sure if it's on Android right now. I know it's on Apple for sure, but I'm not sure if it's on Android.
Wow. That's so amazing. I mean, those things, and I have had somebody who did EFT with me a while ago, and it really works. It really works. And, you know, I'd rather look silly for a few minutes and take care of myself and have longevity than not looking silly and ruining my health. And I think go ahead.
Or being addicted to pain medication. You know, I mean, listen, there is a need for pain medication or anxiety medication or depression medication. Those need to be seriously diagnosed by your doctor, but a pill is not the answer to everything anyway, and you still need to take care of yourself. And my God, when you can have a non-medical, non-medication tool that is readily available literally at your fingertips, and in fact, in reality, we actually practice it somewhat even if we don't know it. So we know that when we've got we're deep in thought, we often will touch the side of our temples, right? That's an acupressure spot, a meridian spot. When we're trying to soothe a child, how often do we tap on their chest? Well, this is a meridian spot. We kind of intuitively do this. So having a more focused practice that is medication-free and available at your fingertips, my goodness, why not?
Amazing. Well, we are getting actually close to the end. So some of your health tips are do the EFT and some other stuff. And you do have a free gift that you want to offer to the audience, which is called Infographics on How to Prevent a Stroke and How to Recognize Stroke and ACT and the FAST, which was what you were talking about, face, arms, speech, and timing. And you also gave me a link for a gift, which was https://mailclc.mp/347-Bruno-41-Bruno66/stroke-prevention. So if you want to go and get that gift, please do so. Is that also a way that they can get in touch with you through that link?
The best way to get in touch with me would be at hopeafterstrokenow, all one word, hopeafterstrokenow@gmail.com. They can also check out my website, hope-stroke.com. And my book, Hope After Stroke for Caregivers and Survivors, is available where all books are sold on Amazon. I'm excited to tell you that the audiobook has come out. That's also on, you know, Apple Audiobooks, Google Play, Audible, Chirp, Barnes & Noble. It's even available through some library outlets.
So amazing. Wow. Listen, I'm really happy you were on here with me today, and you shared so much from your experience, and your knowledge is so wide and deep. It's totally amazing. It was a total honor having you. For the audience, if you have any questions, suggestions, or you want to be on my show, write to me to dythomson@gmail.com or voicemail or text me at 562-335-4956, precise message. And with the email, make sure you put in the subject line BTR or Blog Talk Radio, because all first-time emails go into spam so I can get it out and respond. And I would really love to see you next week again and talk to you all with a different subject. And we have a couple of seconds left, so I just want to see, do you have anything else you want to add for the last 30 seconds or so?
I just want to encourage people to get ahead of life by starting every morning with their own practice, their own ritual of coming to their senses, coming to gratitude or appreciation. Before you turn on the news, before you start your day, get yourself grounded. Turn your oven on, as I like to say, because you will bring into your world what you come with. And come from that place, you'll start to attract more of that. Thank you so much for having me here and being able to share this message of hope with people. And just be well. Continue doing what you're doing.
Great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wait, are we still on?
Okay, let me do this.